This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 19th at 11:11 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like maybe people will realize that blackface, brownface, redface, and all these other types of costumes are incredibly racist. Let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at the world of Ohio politics. If you're new to the podcast, a Snolly Goster is a 19th century term that means shrewd, selfish politician. Yes, they even had those back then. Also, the blackface reference, a quick dig at our neighbor to the north, Justin Trudeau, the prime minister. He was outed this week from a 2001 photo, showed him wearing brownface at a party.
Now, I'm Mike Thompson. Is it wrong for Canadians to wear blackface?
It's wrong for anyone to wear blackface.
Okay. Just checking. Of course, it's wrong to wear blackface. Anyway, I am Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, the gun debate begins in earnest at the Ohio State House. Let's see if lawmakers do something as those at a post-shooting rally in Dayton demanded. We'll also name our Snolly Goster of the Week.
Next to guns, the big political story in Ohio right now is the fight over repealing the energy bailout law signed into law earlier this summer. It's the law, as you probably know by now, that tax small charges onto nearly everyone's electric bill to pay for subsidies to two aging nuclear power plants and also two old coal plants, one of which is in Indiana.
We love pointing that out. Anyway, a group called Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts is collecting signatures to put that repeal on next November's ballot. Another group called Ohioans for Energy Security is spending millions of dollars on ads trying to convince people not to sign the petition. You know the ads inspired by Paul Revere. The ones that say, the Chinese are coming, the Chinese are coming.
They took our manufacturing jobs. They shuttered our factories. Now they're coming for our energy jobs. The Chinese government is quietly invading our American electric grid, intertwining themselves financially in our energy infrastructure.
Now, those ads are very misleading. The Chinese are already here. They're investors in Ohio's energy companies, as are investors from several other countries. The Chinese are not going to take over Ohio's energy grid. There's no evidence that the Chinese even want your voter registration information, as those Orwellian mailers suggest.
That, of course, begs the question, how can they get away with this? For that, we turn to a friend of Snolly Goster, OSU Law Professor Dan Tokaji, an expert in election law. Dan, welcome back to Snolly Goster.
Thanks so much for having me.
What do you think of these ads and these mailers?
Well, I think like a lot of ads we see in our political discourse today, they're misleading at best, false at worst, and I suppose lying at absolute worst. But I also think, and now I'm putting on my hat as a constitutional lawyer and scholar, that they are probably within the scope of protected speech under current First Amendment law. The First Amendment to our Constitution protects the freedom of speech that over the last 100 years has been interpreted quite broadly by the Supreme Court. And importantly, there's no general exception to freedom of speech for false speech. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has said over the last 50 years or so that we need to protect false speech to some degree in order to make room for truthful speech, lest people self-censor at the risk of being sued or prosecuted.
Dan, does it matter that this is political speech at all? Mike and I were talking this morning. Yeah. We're trying to imagine if Pepsi took out ads saying Coke has investments from a Chinese government-owned bank. I can't imagine that would fly too well, and I assume there would be lawsuits to follow. Does it matter that this is political speech?
It matters a lot, and in fact, it matters a lot that it is political speech as opposed to the kind of speech you just mentioned, which we call in First Amendment law commercial speech, advertising being the most prominent example of commercial speech. Now, commercial speech enjoys some protection under our First Amendment, but much less than does political speech, and to my mind, for good reason. The main purpose behind the First Amendment is to allow the free flow of ideas, especially political ideas that inform political debate, that help us hold our leaders accountable and allow us to make intelligent decisions while voting. So there is much greater protection for political speech than there is for commercial speech, i.e. for advertising.
Now, Dan, this is a mix of, you could argue, commercial and political speech, and that these are, in essence, are commercials. They're selling a product, or they're selling one political position over another. Let me just jump in there.
I would disagree with that characterization, as commercial speech has been defined by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I think this very clearly falls within the realm of political speech. They're not advertising a particular product. In the sense that the Supreme Court has used that term when it has defined commercial speech. So I think this is clearly within the realm of political speech. It is about an issue, and an issue of great public policy importance.
That's what I was kind of trying to getting at. So the Supreme Court does not separate a mailer that you get in your mailbox from a candidate or a group making a speech on the stump. To the Supreme Court, it's all one and the same.
Yeah, that's basically right. They're both, whether it's a mailer, and I've actually gotten some mailers that have a very similar flavor to the advertisement that we just heard a few moments ago, advertisements warning that the Chinese are coming. Don't give them any of your personal information by signing their petition. Advertising in the form of a mailer that is extremely misleading, and some might say an outright bald-faced lie, but it is clearly political speech, not commercial speech, and I think is probably within the scope of First Amendment protection. Although some might take a different view. Just to get a bit into the First Amendment law here, as I mentioned earlier, there's no general exception to freedom of speech for falsity. There is, however, a narrow exception for defamation. And in particular, when we're talking about speech about public figures, speech that is either knowingly false or made with reckless disregard for the truth. Now, I think the problem here is that the speech in question doesn't fit under the defamation exception to freedom of speech, because it's not about a particular person. It's about an issue. It's maybe about a group of people, but that wouldn't be within the narrow exception for defamation that can be constitutionally prohibited.
Dan, even if it's legal, can you remember any ads like this that were, quite frankly, xenophobic?
I'm sure there have been, but this is certainly, you know, pushing the envelope really far. You know, you might remember back in the 1990s, the late Senator Jesse Helms ran some really virulent ads against his then opponent, Harvey Gantt, an African-American, were specifically targeted at affirmative action.
This was the one with the white the white hand was coming over it, or something. I forget the exact. It was a hand coming over a piece of paper. I forget now exactly what it was, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, as I recall, it was a white hand, you know, crumpling up a rejection notice for a job, blaming affirmative action for that. Many people viewed that as racist. And then, of course, around the same period, there were the Willie Horton ads that were run in support of the first President Bush against his opponent, Mike Dukakis, I believe.
Yep.
So, you know, we do have some history, but it's hard for me to recall a nativist xenophobic ad as virulent as this one.
What can we do? What can voters do? Journalists, we fact check these ads. We do our best, but it's hard to compete. Not everyone listens to a newscast. Not everyone listens to a podcast, but they see the ads. They get the thing in their mailbox. What can voters do? What can the observers do?
Well, the old saw within the law of free speech and people who talk about free speech is that the best antidote for speech we don't like, including false speech, is counter speech, is to speak up against it. So I think people who are outraged by this kind of advertising should make their outrage known through whatever means are available. Fortunately, we're now living in an age where people can self-publish quite easily. I should say, I suppose, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective.
Depending on your motivation.
Yeah, right. I mean, we have lots of blogs. We have social media that allows us to get our views out there. And I think people should condemn speech that is misleading, false, and xenophobic, like these toxic ads. That's my personal opinion. And I think you all, by doing a podcast about these issues or help raising public consciousness about the toxicity and nefarious nature of this kind of nativist, xenophobic, really hateful advertising, even as those of us who are committed to free speech defend their right to engage in such statements, we should all condemn speech that we think is abhorrent, even if we think that the speaker has a right to engage in that speech.
Dan Takagi, an OSU professor and expert in election law. Great to have you back on Snollygoster. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a treat.
Thanks, Dan.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A month ago, the debate over guns turned in Ohio after a man with an assault-style weapon killed 9 people and wounded 27 others in Dayton. The violence and calls for tougher rules prompted action.
Is to say to them that we love you.
Some chanted, do something. And they were absolutely right. We must do something.
Now, Governor DeWine and the legislature are back to making laws after a summer recess. We're still waiting for legislation that officially puts before lawmakers Governor DeWine's 17-point plan to address gun violence.
In the meantime, legislators are considering 5 gun-related bills sponsored by Democrats. The bills would expand background checks to purchase a gun, increase the age to buy a long gun from 18 to 21. There's a red flag bill, which would allow police to confiscate the guns of someone in danger of committing violence. Another bill would also ban machine gun-like bump stock devices, which the federal government already does ban.
And the bills do have some Republican support, a little anyway. State Senator Peggy Lehner from the Dayton area says the bills will save lives.
It's every bit as much pro-life legislation as protecting the unborn from abortion.
On the other side of this debate, gun rights activists are ready for a fight. One group rallied at the State House last weekend.
And there were still hundreds and hundreds of wonderful, fabulous Ohioans here today standing in defense of their rights and against this tyrannical proposals from Governor DeWine.
And another group rallied just Wednesday. This was clergy rallying for increased gun legislation. So the gun debate, Steve, is really picking up in earnest at the State House. It has been several weeks now since the Dayton shooting. It is kind of fallen off the radar a bit, but it's back. Will it have an impact?
There does not seem to be majority support for even the bills that include Republican sponsors. The bills backed by Peggy Lehner, they're not going to have support from the majority of Republicans, so they're probably not going anywhere.
Let's talk about the red flag bills, the proposals here. The Democrats' proposal is a little different than Governor DeWine's proposal. The Democrats' bill would allow for the immediate confiscation, temporarily, immediate confiscation of guns from someone who's in danger of committing violence to others or to themselves. And then there would be a hearing 2 weeks later to see if the confiscation should be permanent. Mike DeWine's proposal, which again has not been written into any kind of legislation, his proposal would allow for a quick hearing within 3 days to see if this person is truly a danger and should their guns be taken away, and then there'd be another hearing 2 weeks down the road. So it all comes down to what is the proper amount of due process. And some gun rights activists say there's no amount of due process if you take away someone's guns.
Yeah, people like Chris Doerr from Ohio Gun Owners, who we just heard from, I tell you what, Peggy Lehner standing up in the state house and saying that this bill is just as every bit as pro-life as anti-abortion bills are. That's really powerful to hear a Republican say that. Again, I'm just skeptical. In Connecticut, 26 school children were murdered by a mentally unstable person inside an elementary school, and very little was done after that. I don't know if there's a level here in Ohio that would trigger a big legislative response. I can't imagine what the event would have to be. As gross as this sounds to say, I don't think it's the Dayton shooting. I don't think that triggers any kind of massive response legislatively.
Yeah, I think cumulative, these shootings are having an impact. I mean, Sandy Hook, as horrible as it was, there have been many since then. I mean, the Dayton shooting doesn't even rank in the top 25 of the worst mass shootings in the country.
There's one much worse than that a day before in El Paso.
Yeah. So I do think that gun control advocates are gaining more strength. They're able to raise more money. They're more organized. We've seen the rallies. We've seen the Mothers Against Gun Violence, I think is the name of the Moms Demand Action is the official name of their group. You're seeing the Dispatch had digital ads wrap around their newspaper this week demanding action on gun legislation. So I think momentum is growing on the gun control side, but the gun rights side still has the power. They have the leadership. Mm-hmm. Larry Householder is in charge of the House, and he is a strict Second Amendment guy. It's going to take a lot to get him to allow any of these bills to go forward.
It is going to take a lot, and as we've said before, the Buckeye Firearms Association, a very strong pro-gun rights group, has worked with Governor DeWine on some of his 17-point plan. I can't see it. I think any changes will be incremental and relatively minor. I don't see a red flag law passing. I don't see anything that you would notice on a day-to-day level passing.
Maybe background checks, because 90% of the American public supports universal background checks or closing the gun show, private sale loophole.
But it'll ding their NRA rating.
Yeah, but I think that, though, you heard those folks in Dayton, do something. If they don't do anything with regards to guns, I guarantee you.
You think they're a political concept?
They could be.
In these heavily gerrymandered, heavily Republican legislative districts, I don't know what consequences there would be.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's what we'll see. In 2020, will this be a big issue when these folks get back on the ballot? If they have not done something with regards to guns, I guarantee you they're going to do something with regards to mental health and sort of tightening current gun legislation. But new legislation, I think I'm with you that it's not going to happen.
Moving on to our weekly segment, the Snollygoster of the Week. It's the award we dole out every week to the shrewdest politician or shrewdest political move. This week, organizers of this weekend's Ohio Republican Dinner. At the Greater Columbus Convention Center, the keynote speaker will be President Trump's senior advisor, Kellyanne Conway. Certainly no stranger to controversy.
No, it should be an interesting speech that she gives. But like they did last year when President Trump spoke, organizers have rules for the media. Here they are. Reporters, we are allowed to cover the event, but reporters have to stay in a confined area, and reporters are not allowed to talk to people at the dinner. Last year, event staff members even followed reporters to the bathroom just to make sure there weren't any over-the-stall or adjacent urinal conversations or interviews.
Kind of a creepy thought there, having a PR flak peering over your shoulder at the urinal. Anyway, many Ohio news organizations, including WOSU and Ohio Public Radio, are refusing to cover it if the rules are not changed.
The state party says it can make the rules because it's a private event. So, a private, even secret event it may be.
We should say that you and I are the ones who would make this decision for WOSU. So this would be our decision to not cover this event based on this Republican decision, which we both stand by, we both agreed upon. But
yeah,
just for full disclosure, it would be our decision.
And in all likelihood, it would be different if it was the President of the United States talking and not just one of his advisors.
Right. No, definitely. There you go. The Ohio Republican Party, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a nomination for next week, please email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.